Well, good morning, everybody across the United States. This is Mal Bolaires, and a happy Tuesday. We are having a party on Mr. Arthur Godfrey's premises. It's a lot more fun if you join in with us. Breathless from time to time, it's because my youngsters have been absolutely chasing me all over the city. Yesterday, we did Central Park and lunch up there, and the SEALs wanted us to say hello to all of you, too. And what else? Oh, FAO Schwartz has been bought out. We completely closed them out of business, and the hotel and the taxi cabs, and we are having a ball in this big old city. I want you to meet the ones who are going to be with us this morning while Arthur Godfrey is, 10,000 miles away off in Vietnam, and I wish he'd at least send us a postcard. We're kind of lonely, but to hold up the end of the show and to make it all kind of light and fun and musical, too. Kay Armin, how are you?
Fine. Good morning. How
would
are you?
Would you do one thing for me, Kay?
Sure.
Since you're an ex-Chicago, and give me, right out of the top of your head, your favorite memory of our town.
I was born there.
Yeah, well, that's brief and to the point. Come on, not all. What else?
No, I love Chicago. It's a marvelous town. But I had to leave because of the business. But I still think what you said yesterday about that view from the lake is one of the most beautiful things in the world today.
You were listening to yesterday's show.
Yes, I was.
It was fun to do. Ed Ames, are you coming to visit us this morning as Ed Ames or Mingo?
Well, I don't have my braids with me, so I guess I'm just going to have to be Ed Ames.
You are a strong and a handsome devil, though. And is it true that you do all your stunt work yourself?
Well, not all of it, but a good part of it, yes. Some
would
of
you,
it. I do all the stuff with my crazy weapons, my whips and everything, all by myself.
Whew. And maybe on Arthur's show this morning, you'll teach us some of that. Frank Garone?
How are you, Mel?
I'm a fan of yours, too. You seem like a Chicagoan, although I guess you're from somewhere, where?
Providence,
Rhode Island.
Originally, but I spent a lot of time in Chicago.
What was the place you were in 1956, 57, 58?
Dante's Inferno.
Did you bring your guitar along with you this morning?
Oh, yes.
Ah, that's nice. Our fourth guest sits off just to my right in a pretty green dress this morning. You know, when you are coming into New York to do a show like this, you have to do your homework. So I have been doing mine. In my spare time, I have read Sex and the Single Girl. I have read Sex and the Office. Mrs. Helen Gurley Brown. You're pretty much in favor of sex, aren't you?
I certainly am, Mel. I hope you're reading my new book of Outrageous Opinions of Helen Brown, and also Cosmopolitan. We got a little sexy in there, too. That's a magazine, as you know.
Ladies, wherever you are across the United States, whether you are married or not, Mrs. Helen Gurley Brown has things to say to you. So this is the cast, and this is the way we are going to operate. And I think the first thing we ought to do before we do anything is to let Mr. Arthur Godfrey have a word to say on his own show, don't you?
Good morning, Mel. My first thought today is for folks who have guests coming in every once in a while, especially late at night, like to serve snacks in a hurry. You stock up with cans of La Choy noodles. They're a very good light snack for warm weather, ready to eat straight from the can. You mix a bowl full of salty snacks with these things, too. You put one large can of La Choy noodles in a shallow pan. You add 2 tablespoons melted butter mixed with 1/4 teaspoon of garlic salt. You could use seasoned salt instead of garlic if you want to, or you could add 2 tablespoons of grated Parmesan cheese. And you stir it all together with a fork, and you heat it in a 250-degree oven for 30 minutes, stirring occasionally. This is great with tall, cool drinks. La Choy noodles.
We should have a little oriental music there, shouldn't we? After all, in Chicago, we have a great, wonderful swing in Chinatown. So, Arthur, you've got a lot of real, honest-to-goodness oriental customers in our town. Ed, I know you, when you were doing mostly singing, and now you're mostly an acting guy, but singing at the same time. If it were baseball, you'd be a triple threat man. Tell me a little bit about Daniel Boone now. How did you come to get involved in this?
Well, I was in a series of Broadway plays here in New York, the last of which I played a fellow who was half Indian. And when they were casting the Daniel Boone series, they needed somebody who was very tall and who might pass himself off as a half Indian, which, of course, is the character that I play. And so when I finished the run of the play, which was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Kirk Douglas, they called me out and we made a deal, and we made the pilot, which sold shortly thereafter. And ever since then, I've been on the Daniel Boone series, along with Fess Parker, who plays the part of Daniel.
Now, would you sing us a song now? Can we take you out of the acting area? You've got a new tune out, I know, because it came into my office last week, and I didn't even have time to put it on a show before I packed up and came in.
Oh, well, good, then I'll give you a little preview.
It's called, just a minute, I'm going to think of There's a Time.
Right.
Can we get you to the microphone as of right this minute?
Be delighted.
There's a time for everything, as the time goes by. There's a time for everything, time to laugh and time to cry. There's a time for birds to sing and for bells to chime, but the time to fall in love can be on by. There's a time for everything, time to laugh and a time to cry. And there's a time for the birds to sing,
to say a great big thank you to Johnny Parker and the boys who took that arrangement fresh from the pen of Ed's favorite arranger about 10 minutes ago, and we're transposing all over the place, and you're all great. You are just as good as I've ever heard.
Thank you.
That takes a lot of talent there.
It sure does.
Ed, when you're singing like that, do you sometimes kind of miss Brother Vic and Joe there in with you?
No, because I do sometimes, but of course these are songs that I have been doing, you know,
sure,
on the records that I make alone now, but every once in a while, you know, I still enjoy singing harmony. I must say, I just did a show with a wonderful performer, John Gary, who's had a great season. I did the last show of his summer replacement for Danny Kaye, and it was kind of fun because Johnny's a very musical guy, and we did some things together, you know, and sang harmony. It was like the old days.
Well, I'm still using some of your Ames Brothers albums on my Sunday Afternoon Society, which is called My Music Show in Chicago on Sundays, and this new one of yours will be on that show.
Well,
now,
great.
Before you go one step farther, you see, that's Christopher, my little guy over there. He's the 5-year-old, and that's Jeffrey. He's the 7-year-old. Now, they're not fans of Ed Ames. They're fans of Mingo. And you've got to tell them a story of something that has happened with you in one of the shows that you've been doing, the Daniel Boone series.
Just so they'll recognize me, though, I'll give them a little one of the whippoorwill calls.
Please do.
If you can picture Daniel and Mingo stealing through the underbrush. You'll have to picture me with big long braids and feathers in my hair, though. And the hostile Indians are all around us in the woods, and we don't want them to know that we're there, so we call to each other like this. Do you recognize that?
Yeah.
That he knows.
Those eyes get big and round like that. Now you know, guys, I wasn't kidding when I told you who I was going to bring you to meet. Ed Ames, thank you very much. And sit down, because you've got to try to remember before you leave this studio this morning,
I wouldn't leave without singing it.
One of my favorite guys, Ed Ames. Come on. Now, Arthur, coming through the underbrush with your long feathers. Woohoo! Woohoo!
Mel, one of the things I think we probably forgot to tell you is that I have been placed in charge of regularity in the country. And since I'm over in Vietnam now, you'll have to take over for me and watch out for the regularity of our friends. I want all those who listen to us to be regular fellas. And, of course, the way they do it is to eat lots of Kellogg's bran. Comes in two nice forms, bran buds and the famous old original all bran. If you eat Kellogg's bran buds or Kellogg's all bran, you'll be sure that you're getting the bulk you need for natural regularity. And on top of that, these things taste good. I just love them. I have them most every morning when I'm back on the mainland at home. Bran buds one morning, Kellogg's all bran the next. I like to put honey and whole milk on them. Makes a marvelous breakfast. And it's a great idea to take it every day because you just stay in good shape all the time. Crisp, sweet morsels of bran with a new youthful taste are the Kellogg's bran buds. The Kellogg's original all bran, I'm sure everybody has tried it. Just remember to keep at it. Not only because it's good for you and keeps you one of the regular fellas, but it tastes good, too, and it's a darn good food. Remember, there are two products now, Kellogg's All Bran and Kellogg's Bran Buds.
Arthur, I have duly noted, and the kids have, too, and we are well aware of your Kellogg's family of fine products. The only thing is, I think people around New York need to be told more about these than we do back in our part of the country, because we eat breakfast. In New York, I see people go dashing into places, they grab a quick cup of coffee, and zoom out the door. Yesterday morning, I haven't had breakfast yet, are you kidding? Yesterday morning, we took the family, we were down at the RCA building, down on the concourse next to where the ice skating rink will be in a few weeks. We watch people come in and go out. We were there 3 times as long as anybody else because we're breakfast eaters. The girl who waited on us sounded and looked exactly like Thelma Ritter. I collect people the way some people collect matchbox covers and things like that. Kay Armin, I collect you. I like you the way
you
sing.
I'd like to be in your collection.
All right. Put you right up on top. Where were you raised, little girl, in Chicago?
On the northwest side.
Whereabouts?
Near Humboldt Park.
Where'd you go to school?
Lafayette Grammar School and Thule High.
I bet you there are a lot of people in Chicago right now getting a squinge out of what you say. You left us too long ago and you haven't been back often enough.
Well, it's been almost 20 years, a little over 20 years. I left Chicago in 43, April of 43, and went down to Nashville, Tennessee, stayed there for 9 months, and then came up to New York on a staff job here with one of the networks, and I've been here ever since, except for a fleeting visit back home.
That Nashville is a wild town now.
Oh, it's marvelous. The minute I got down there, I started running around barefoot. Because everybody was like shoeless, you know, and they had guitars and the calico dresses, and I had shoes on. I used to sing barefooted in the studio. It was the most wonderful experience I ever had, where I really learned my craft, because I did close to 17 shows a week.
17?
Yes, and then we'd go out and do all the army camps around the vicinity there, because it was in the heart of the war.
I was down there. We were in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. We were in Camp Campbell, Kentucky.
Camp Campbell was where we went. Yeah. That was the one of the only shows that was given to the boys that went out to do the first parachute jump in, you know, overseas. I forget exactly the name.
The 82nd Airborne Division.
Yes, it was something to see because everything was closed. We had to go by school bus. Nobody knew what the route was. We went by army car. It was all security and secret.
Miss Armin, would you do a song for us now? And please do not sing "There'll Be Something Over the White Cliffs of Dover When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again"
no,
or anything.
We'll
nothing
that.
Out of World War II. What's your tune?
What do you do, John?
You want to do Cry Me a River?
All right, we'll do Cry Me a River.
Oh, let's go.
Bad.
Being so untrue. and cry me a river. Cry me a river. I cried a river over you. You drove me, nearly drove me out of my head. Why you never shed a tear? Remember, I remember all that you said. Told me love was too plebeian. Told me you were through with me. And now you say you love me. Well, just to prove that you do, come on and cry me a river.
To move along, Arthur Godfrey is right now just about to tell you about Kerr lids and jars. Well, I know something about these products, too, because when I was a boy growing up on a cattle ranch about Livermore, Colorado, this was chokecherry time of year, and I used to go out with my little bucket and contribute my share of the chokecherries for jam. And you know, Kerr. So, Arthur, what can you say that I haven't already said?
Just a reminder now, Mal, to the ladies to be sure to get their Kerr jars, caps, and lids for canning. This is the season, and I hope you get your supply of Kerr jars, caps, and lids before the dealer runs out. He does every year, you know. And you can can or freeze those fruits and vegetables that you find in such great quantities on the markets these days at such low prices. Canning is really simple at home, and Kerr's exclusive three-way sealing cushion makes a perfect seal possible every time. Get the best results every time with Kerr jars, caps, and lids.
Right, Arthur. And now, you've heard of the Tijuana Brass. I want you to listen to our Johnny Parker and his 52nd and Madison Street Brass.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
And what do you know? Now we've come back from the West Coast. Hello, San Francisco, and good old Los Angeles, and down south, and around the Midwest, and hello, Memphis, Tennessee, and how are you? This is Arthur Godfrey's show. Mal Belair's from Chicago, sitting in with some of the nicest people you'll ever meet in your whole life. Helen Gurley Brown is coming under my microscope right now, and Frank Derone is sitting there with a guitar, and you know Frank Derone. You've already heard from Ed Ames and from Kay Armin, and they've got more to say. My only regret is that there's never enough time to do all the things you want to do. In New York this week, as I am with my wife and five children, we are doing things, we're going places, and I keep being impressed by the fact that this is a big city, but you're still dealing with individual people. I met one of my favorite philosophers this morning, the New York cabbie. I don't think in any other city in the world you'll find as much quick thinking as you find from the cabbies. 10 minutes I was in the cab, I found out about this man, that he's just come back from a vacation up in Canada. He's an antiquer. He's been up in New England. He said, I even went past a place called Hanover, and I said to my wife, that's where Dartmouth is. And our oldest boy graduated from there, and I said, yeah, keep talking. And he told me about picking up things, how he's up in Quebec City and loved that big walled city. He gave me the whole story on integration, said, you people have got a lot of problems in Chicago. And I said, well, we don't think of them as problems. We think of them as growing pains, and we're going to work this whole situation out because this is a big country. It's made up of fine people. And he said, yeah. He said, now, I don't know how you think about the international situation, but I'm going to tell you. See, this is what New York cabbies always do. They say, I don't know how you think, but I'm going to tell you. And he said, I don't think we ought to be there. I said, well, granted, you're right. How do you get out? He said, you know, that's the problem. And then he gave me the line that made this man, to me, a great individualist. He said, you know, There's a rotten herring somewhere in this whole kettle of fish. He didn't say there's something rotten in Denmark. There's a rotten herring. And, of course, New York and kosher corned beef and the whole thing. And I sort of smiled. We got on out of the cab and we went into our hotel. And I had three of the boys with me. We had just come from FAO Schwartz. And they'd been saving their money for weeks to come here. And they each had a great big package. And the lady in her mid-60s looked at me and she said, "Oh, this is so nice." She evidently lives in this hotel. I don't know whether she lives alone, but she kind of looked it. And she said, "Mister, cherish those kids at this age. I wish I had done that. You know, when mine were that age, they were always in the way and a big bother to me. And I wish I had them back right now, that age." And it gave me a little lump. It really did. That's your city of New York. It's big and it's noisy. But by golly, it's made up of people with warm hearts and flesh just like yours and mine anywhere in this country. Arthur, on the subject of flesh, avoir du poids, I know you've got a word.
Mel, I got a nice letter from Bill Krull of the Campana Corporation in Batavia, Illinois, just before I left, in which he said that, quote, "We have received literally thousands of letters from people, all of which add up to pretty strong testimony to the fact that people can and do lose weight with the help of AIDS. Sometimes they may only want to lose 10 or 20 pounds, and other times, as in the case of Mrs. Henderson, about whom I told you, will be as much as 97 to 100 pounds. The point is that they do work. Best regards, Bill." And he sent me some of these letters again. I used up the bunch he gave me last time. Here's one from Mrs. Geraldine Jordan of Fort Lauderdale in Florida. She says she weighed 155, and 1 month later, 139. She says, "I'm so happy I read in a magazine about AIDS, so I tried them. I won't ever be overweight again as long as I can find AIDS." And Mrs. Charlene Gillespie of Aurora, Indiana. She started out at 134 pounds. 3 weeks later, weighed 124. She had tried diet pills before and got nowhere, she says. Here's one, says, "Before AIDS, I weighed 140. 3 weeks later, I weigh 131. Mrs. Ralph C. Reed of a town called North in South Carolina. Now, that's a little confusing. She lives in North, South Carolina. And she accompanied her card with a letter saying, "I've lost 2 more pounds. I now weigh 129. Wowee. She's going on down to reach 125. There you go. That's the way the stuff goes. They make better commercials than anything I can say. AIDS, A-Y-D-S. Just take them according to directions, as these women have done, and you will lose weight, my friend. You will.
Yes, Arthur. And, you know, I keep waiting. Arthur gets letters from all over the country. Peter LaSalle, sitting here to my right, has Arthur ever gotten a letter from Hell, Michigan? There is a town, and they have a great big folder. I think I brought one with me just to show you, that says, "Go to Hell, Michigan." And I wonder if Arthur... This could be a lot of fun, and if he hasn't, I'm going to see to it that he gets some letters. Frank Derone, Remo, would you sit there and be my honest critic for Frank Derone? And Frank, would you play, and if you get the inspiration to sing, do that too?
All righty.
Long. You are
the breathless hush of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song. You are the angel glow that lights a star. The dearest things I know are what you are.
Just great. No wonder Arthur Godfrey likes to have this man on his show. Remo, can you sing?
No.
Then you are in no imminent danger as of now, Mr. Derone. Stay where you are. Arthur wants to tell you about Miracle White. And Arthur, what do you say?
Mal, Miracle White is our sponsor here, used by thousands of homemakers throughout the country. Now available almost everywhere. Miracle White, the new laundry additive that whitens and brightens your laundry. You use 1/4 cup of Miracle White in your wash and half the amount of soap or detergent that you normally use, and you'll find your clothes whiter and brighter than they ever were before, or you will get twice your money back. Miracle White.
Helen Gurley Brown, you and I are the ones who obviously don't sing or play Vinci's or things, but I had a funny thought that sort of ties you into this whole little party of ours with these new singing groups and the guitars that we've been talking around. Names like the Rolling Stones and the Hermits and the Animals and the Chosen Few. It's kind of hard for a group to find a new musical name. I heard before I left Chicago of a 6-piece band in an Indiana high school with a girl vocalist, and they call themselves Six and the Single Girl. So that should sort of be something about your book. Now listen, seriously, I have read the books here, and I made a comment yesterday. I said, this gal sounds very sophisticated. I had not met you before. I know there are a lot of women all across the country who kind of wonder about the things that you have to talk about. Where'd the book go? Helen Gurley Brown's Outrageous Opinions. I haven't read this. When did it come out?
A few weeks ago, Mel.
Live Alone and Orgy. What do you mean by that?
Well, that whole book is... Yeah,
she
really
did. It's a heading of one of her paragraphs here.
That whole book is for girls who don't live with anyone else, or at least they don't have a permanent man in their lives, and it's supposed to tell them everything they can do to have a better life and be grateful for what they have. And I think living alone is a very nice thing to do for a certain period in your life, but a lot of girls who are doing it don't appreciate it. So those are about 37 rules, as I remember, for having an orgy all by yourself. There are all kinds of orgies, as you know. They don't all have to be orgies. There can be eating orgies and singing orgies and dancing orgies, and many of them you can do all by yourself.
Now, what about this finding a man, though? Does this come into this whole general category of you prepare the apartment and do you invite a man over to this apartment, or
Mel, you know, I've been writing these books for several years now, and many people think that I'm a very superficial woman and tell women to do very superficial things. They feel that I don't think deeply, that I don't tell my girl to have any kind of soul or real appreciation of the finer things of life. And all I can say is that in this country there are millions more women looking for men than there are men looking for women. Those are just the statistics. Therefore, I have a great deal to say in that book, also in Cosmopolitan, which I bring out every month with a lot of help. I have a lot to say about the fact that it's wonderful to have a man in your life. If you haven't got one, you're not really living, since they're a little bit hard to get hold of because of the ratio of men to women. It behooves you to do everything you can think of to get one of these lovely things into your life. So I say a lot about it every time I get the chance.
Why do all these women that are looking for men keep saying no all the time?
Well,
good question, Frank.
That's in the book. She tells you why they don't say no. If you,
well, you're a married man,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Do you find it's a good idea to approach a woman when you're married to another?
When I'm married... Well, I'm not speaking as a married man. I'm speaking the ratio of women and men and looking for men.
Well, I think... I don't know if Miss Brown would admit to this. I think she would. I think a lot of women who don't have much to do with men is because 9 times out of 10, if a man is married and he feels he wants to go out and... make another chalk mark on the wall, so to speak, he might try going with a single girl, and it's very difficult for a single girl to be involved with a married man.
That's not true. I don't think Helen Gurley Brown believes that, Kay. Do you, Helen? Is it difficult for a single girl to be involved with a married man?
I think nobody is off limits for lunch. I think it's okay for anybody to have lunch with anybody, especially in a business situation. Since there are more men than girls, a lot of girls get involved with married men. It's nothing that I personally recommend, but I try to talk about how things are, not how they're supposed to be. And many times a girl has come through such an encounter and she's a little bit stronger, a little bit braver. She's learned a great deal. Sometimes the man goes back home. He's a little bit happier, a little bit stronger. He realizes this kind of thing isn't going to work. He really does love his wife. It has some disastrous results some of the time, but not all of the time.
You really have to know yourself pretty thoroughly, though, before you start, shall we say, fiddling around in this area?
Oh, I don't think anyone ever knows himself
thoroughly. This is what scares me, too.
Frank was just saying, why do girls always say no? Well, I think there are a lot of girls who do categorically say no to everything, and I've written considerably about that also, because I think you should say yes to everything that you can in life. And, you know, the fact is that you can talk to married men. You can flirt with them at
parties.
Well,
I'm not even speaking of married men, now.
You're just talking about men generally.
Men, right.
Well, you know, I happen to think that when a man wants to kiss you or put his arms around you or whatever he wants to do, it's apt to be more of a compliment than it is anything else. There are plenty of women that nobody is making a pass at, so to speak, and I think they're the most deprived of all girls, and I believe more and more that girls are realizing when a man likes you well enough to want to hold hands with you or be close to you, he's not necessarily insulting you. He's paying you a very big compliment. Now, some men go about it in a rather peculiar way, and they have to be put down a little bit, but maybe Frank and I are on the same team. I think girls should love men and should say yes to anything they can say yes to. And
is this how you got involved with the Cosmopolitan, if I may be so? What are you trying to say in the Cosmopolitan? All of a sudden, here you are. This is your baby.
Mm.
What are you doing with this magazine?
Well, you know, sometimes I wonder about having gotten it to be editor of. It's again this thing that we're talking about. I think you should say yes. And at one time, I was getting all this mail from girls having written these books, asking advice. And I thought, gee, there ought to be a magazine for this kind of girl. As far as I know, there's no magazine out there which appeals to women who don't have husbands. Most of them assume that a girl has got a guy. And there's nobody out there who's appealing to girls who have jobs, working girls. So I decided to put a magazine format together for those particular women. And I didn't start my own magazine, but the people at Cosmopolitan said, well, maybe you could take over this magazine and turn it into a book for those particular girls. And that's sort of what we've done.
I've been looking through the August issue, and I might say that this picture looks like both my girls with the long hair and the big eyes. Yes. And listen to this. Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton now. Now, who could resist this? What do they mean? After Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Are they playing life like... You couldn't resist reading a column like this. Poor Girl's Guide to America's Rich Young Men. You can't miss on that. Released at last, the new book by Charlie Chaplin's son. Now, this is an interesting man, Charlie Chaplin's son. Imagine growing up under the genius of having that man for a father. Dating by computer. Actual experiences of 4 career girls. I'm going to take this home and read it. We are not going to have a little cranberry juice with Arthur Godfrey.
Mal, I don't know about you folks in Chicago, but here in the East, we've been on a cranberry juice kick for, 7 years now. I've been on it. I learned about it when I was in Harkness Pavilion here some 7 years ago after the lobectomy. And I have been on it ever since, and I get everybody I know to get on the cranberry juice. Because of the things that it does for you. Ooh, it's marvelous stuff, and it tastes so good, and it has a lovely color. And it colors beautifully anything you use it in, of course. Clear and crimson. And the taste is nice and tart and tangy, and it's refreshing any time of the day. You may prefer to drink it chilled, straight from the bottle, or on the rocks. I suggest that you drink it when it's cool, or at least cool. Don't drink it warm. Nothing tastes good that way, but... Ice it or keep it in the icebox, you know, the refrigerator. Mix it with orange juice, fruit juices of any kind, iced teas. Marvelous half and half with iced tea. Ocean Spray cranberry juice. It is good for you.
In one of the books that Helen Gurley Brown has written, I think it was Sex and the Single Girl, tells on how to bring lunch to the office and sort of set it up for the boss. If he invites you to have lunch with him, and she mentions bringing in a champagne cooler, do you mind if we change that to cranberry juice on the rocks?
By all means.
Seriously, do you think an ex-wife should get alimony?
No.
Oh, this is unusual for a woman to say that.
Yay.
John,
you're right.
Some of the people jumped 3 feet in the air. Why?
I think she should get child support if she has young children, and if her ex-husband is a great deal wealthier than she, if she's the rich one in the family, I'm not even sure she should get child support. I just think, Mal, if we get equal opportunities whereby we can go out and make lots of money and be self-supporting citizens and become everything we're able to become, that it's silly to pretend that we're second-rate and that we're helpless when a man leaves or when we leave a man. And I think alimony just makes bums out of girls. It keeps them from getting married again because the alimony stops. It makes them jailers of men. It causes them to be, well, it just brings out the worst in women. Some women have even brought men into court and put them in jail because they're behind in the payments. I say, for goodness sake, forget him. Go out and make your own money. You know, it's really a job market now. Any woman can get a job. They're crying for her in all kinds of occupations. So it's silly to say that she's destitute, even if she has 5 or 7 children as you do. Sure, it's a lot tougher, but she can find a job. She can make her own way. It's been the making of many women, and I just think alimony is immoral.
Do you hear that, my wife, Joe? Do you hear that? One, two, three, child support, I'm still stuck. In fact, I think I'll stick with the same wife I've got. Things are going along pretty well. I just as soon not get involved in that whole situation. But next time you come to Chicago, would you come be on my show there?
I'd be delighted.
All right. Arthur?
Mel, our client is Fleischmann's margarine. So low in saturated fat, and therefore so right for the low saturated fat diets that many doctors now advise for all the family, young and old. Fleischmann's has the light, delicate, golden flavor that everybody will love. No trouble getting people to eat and enjoy Fleischmann's margarine. You'll love the flavor, too, yourself. Fleischmann's, it's made from 100% corn oil, with almost a cup of that delicious golden liquid corn oil in every pound. And because of that 100% corn oil, Fleischmann's is so low in saturated fat. And it can help lower the saturated fat in your diet, as many doctors advise for the whole family. Fleischmann's, it comes unsalted for salt-free diets or those who like a sweet spread. That's made from 100% corn oil, too. Comes in a green foil package, and you find it in the frozen food section. Fleischmann's regular, lightly salted margarine is in the refrigerated section in the familiar golden foil package, which everybody knows. Buy Fleischmann's. It's made from 100% corn oil.
Mr. Ames, you were very quiet during that whole discussion about sex and dating and so forth. You were sitting here smoking a cigar and sort of comfortable with his legs stretched out in front. Any comments?
Well, I agree and disagree with many of the things that were said. There was a great deal of common sense exhibited here. I do feel, though, that in a situation like the question of alimony, that I think what you have, it's like any law. There are times when the law is abused in one direction. There are other times when the law is abused in another direction. In other words, I assume that there must be many women who suffer. What about the women, for example, who contribute to a husband's business over many years and everything is in his name, and he sees a young chick and takes off and leaves her? Not only has she lost her husband, but she's lost a great deal of work and contribution to the family business.
Helen, I'm not even going to let you answer that because we're all going out for coffee immediately after the show, and we'll be sitting here until noon.
You never should have asked me.
I really shouldn't, because you know what? Really, time, the bugaboo for all of us, is going to catch up with us. And, Ed, as you know very well, there's a show called Fantastics. What a show. And out of the show, there's a song called Try to Remember. And you are the gent who picked this song out of somewhere. And I think you have made it one of our great American songs, kind of like, like Stardust. Would you do it for us right here now for everybody clear across this country?
Try to remember the kind of
September when life was slow and oh so mellow. Try to remember the kind of September when grass was green and grain was yellow. Try to remember the kind of September when you were a tender and callow fellow. Try to remember, and if you remember, then follow. Try to remember when life was so tender that no one wept except the willow. Try to remember when life was so tender that dreams were kept beside your pillow. Try to remember when life was so tender and love was an ember about to billow. Try to remember, and if you remember, then follow. December, it's nice to remember without a hurt. The heart is hollow. Deep in December, it's nice to remember the fire of September that made us mellow. Deep in December, our hearts should remember and follow.
Gives you goosebumps, it really does. I swear that has the most beautiful words in it. Thank you so much, Ed Ames. This was worth the whole trip to New York if not a thing else had happened to me.
Thank you very much, Mal.
Arthur, it's up to you now.
Mal, I want to urge our dear friends to get on that Lysol brand spray disinfectant and deodorant. Oh, this is the greatest stuff because it leaves no odor at all of its own and gets rid of all the other unsavory things. There is no perfumey after scent like so many other sprays. It kills mold and mildew. It kills that rhinovirus bug, too, the one that causes so many colds. Use it in the bathroom, in the kitchen, the baby's room, the playroom, bathtub mats, shower floors. Take a can of it with you, Lysol brand spray, when you go on vacation. Spray the motel rooms with it, bathrooms, public washrooms. Very good. Lysol brand spray deodorant.
And Arthur, wherever you are, I hope things go well with you, and I hope you're not too hot and uncomfortable. It's a hot world. I hope you'll send us a tape so we can tell everybody across the country what you're doing, because they're all most concerned about you, naturally. And to you four who have sat here with me this morning, I have loved every minute of it. Helen Gurley Brown, good luck to you. And whatever you do with your magazine, you're a little girl with a great big job. Good luck. Ed Ames, thanks to Mingo for being here with us today.
Good luck to seeing you in Chicago, Mal.
Next time, Kay Armand, God love you, girl.
Thank you, Mal.
You're a good Chicagoan. Frank Garone.
My pleasure,
Young ding-a-dung-ding-a-dung, you know. I hope you'll all be with us tomorrow morning because we've got another show, and we always show up. You supply the coffee and the sweet rolls, and we'll supply the people. Johnny Parker and group, thank you very much. This is Mal Belairs from Chicago. Until tomorrow. Today's program was edited to comply with time requirements. This is the CBS Radio Network.
This is CBS News. A question of law. One court overrules another in the issue of the courts versus the Congress. The housing hassle. Further demonstrations promised in Chicago as charges fly in Washington. Reservist future. The Senate ponders a bill and the White House watches. We'll have a report. And Scotland Yard's manhunt intensifies. These and other top stories of the hour on CBS Radio News. This is Mike Wallace in New York. In a question affecting the very roots of the American Constitution, the next move is now up to the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU yesterday won a federal court decision in Washington, a decision barring the House Committee on Un-American Activities from holding hearings on anti-Vietnam War demonstrations. At issue was the historic doctrine of the separation of powers among the legislative, judicial, and executive branches of the federal government. The committee fought the threat of an encroachment by the judiciary on congressional powers and went ahead anyway with its hearings. They began an hour ago. But the issue has been temporarily blunted anyway because minutes before the House committee hearings began,